Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let me respond to Peter's topic about business of science advising by relating to you one personal episode that happened to me 30 years ago. It was in Nairobi at the early days of negotiation of the Convention on Biological Diversity. I was the science technical advisor to the Malaysian government delegation. At the end of the first day, I took courage and walked up to the head of my delegation, and I told her, "Madam Ambassador, I wanted to go home." And she smiled at me, and she said, "Professor, why don't you give yourself a few days?" And she said, "Why?" Because I couldn't adapt to the culture there. These diplomats who would meet in plenary for 1 hour, and then they would adjourn to the delegates' lounge and have coffee and tea. But I realized that's where the decisions were made. That was 30 years ago. I never looked back. So the lessons, ladies and gentlemen, is there is a role for the scientific community. And you know, the moment, the opportunity have never been this great for the scientific community, for the scientists to stand up and be counted. This is the moment that the scientific community has been asking for a seat on the table. And I'll tell you why. We have a very good example. The IPCC is one of them, which has drawn the attention of the world, and I think they have succeeded. That has been followed by the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, IPBES, of which I'm the founding chair. And earlier in 2013, the UN Secretary General himself have seen it fit to establish the Scientific Advisory Board. And of course, in our part of the world, Chair, the APEC economists, we have the APEC Chief Science Advisors and equivalent platform. And of course, also, in a very elegant way, Mr. Koji Omi, who's sitting down there, had initiated the Science and Technology for Society Forum in Kyoto. So what I'm trying to impress here is the forum, the platform has been there. But ladies and gentlemen, there are certain principles that we need to remember here. One is credibility, our credibility as scientists. I think that's given. People here who are eminent scientists, Nobel laureates, the credibility is not need not to be questioned. But there are two other points that needs to be taken in. Secondly, I think when we talk to the politician, the policymakers, we need to have their buy-in. And that is the legitimacy that the scientific community needs to have. And thirdly, it has to be relevant, the salience of the problem at hand. That has to be articulated by the scientific community, because the issue is so urgent, as the president was mentioning just now. And in fact, the polar bear that he mentioned was a very iconic thing. And that is the conundrum of science, if I could say, how science, through human activities, since the Industrial Revolution, we have become a geological force ourselves. At one time, we thought nothing that human can do would change the world. But through our human activities, we have changed the chemistry of our atmosphere, causing sea level to rise, ice to melt, and polar bears to perish. That is the kind of urgency that we are addressing. Let me also move forward here in response to the chair. There are several aspects of advice. One is, of course, deliberative advice, as you mentioned. Second, informal advice. And third, rapid advice for emergencies. Let me just fast forward to what's happening in the country. I'm advising the Prime Minister on science. His mind is not on science. His mind is on economics, on jobs, and well-being of the people. So if you want to advise the politician, you must relate to those targets of jobs and well-being, how science, technology, and innovation can be an engine for economic development. So that is one aspect of science advice that I assume on an everyday basis, getting the ears of the Prime Minister. Secondly, of course, from time to time, the informal advice, these are sort of irritants to him or even the public. Things like GMOs, you know, things like cloning. Those informal advice has to come from the scientific community too. And in our experience in Malaysia, we have the sad incidents of the loss of Malaysia Airline 370. And it's a very big tragedy, but it's also replete with a lot of scientific and mathematical elements that needs to be drawn from the scientific community. And finally, Chair, rapid advice for emergencies. We talk about climate change as one of those emergencies, but in Southeast Asia, we have had this problem of haze for almost 20 years. So it's an intergenerational problem. And recently, as the chair was mentioning, the Prime Minister, during his opening remark, requested us, what can science and technology brought to the table to overcome this haze, the burning of peatlands in a neighboring country, in that part of the world? We quickly found out that it is not a simple S&T problem. It's more than that. So I'm urging here for us to take a holistic look. It is only not science and technology, but also economics, sociology, and the whole world. So to conclude, I think I am very encouraged by the comments of the Hungarian president to say that he is offering the scientific community to be allies to the politician. So let's get going. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Zachary.